south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. It seems all humans of the female persuasion love horses. And if you do love horses, and you've never had one before because they're just way too expensive to keep, train, and, well, look after, ladies, you are in luck. If you come down here to Latin America, you can have the horse of your dreams. So yes, it is a hobby for many rich Latin women, but it's also a hobby for average gringa women too. Now, as far as men, the ones I know anyway, and horses. When you mention horses, 99% of the time, it's about the track and betting and all that. It seems to be a fact that men and horses just don't bond like women and horses. And of course, old Sigmund Freud would say it's about control issues and a woman's power over one large dumb creature versus the large dumb creature at home she has little or no power over. Though some might see it differently, that's one explanation. So the question I have for all you male listeners out there, have you ever been sucked into going riding with your girlfriend, wife, significant other, gay friend, or family member? I bet you have, and you were bored out of your wits, right? Which is exactly what happened to me last Sunday. Well, wouldn't you know it, there are a lot of natural sanctuaries and horse riding stables in pretty much every Latin country because horses are cheap and easy to keep. Down here, anyway, because, well, first of all, you've got four growing seasons, so they always have something to eat. The fact is, you don't see people buying feed for their horses. As long as you've got just a little patch of land, it's not necessary. The other thing is there's no cold weather, freeze, or frost, so horses don't need special winter quarters either. Now, of course, horses need a lot of upkeep, cleaning the stables, brushing them down, feeding them, someone to be constantly on the poop scoop detail. Horses are big, so a lot of organic volume there, you know. But did you know down here you could hire people that know all about horses for around $200 a month? Just give them room and board at the stables. That's right, horse keepers and caretakers, $200 a month. That's why if you're down here and you're into horses, you could easily get one boarded and stabled for $100 a month or less. And that would include the feed, the stable, and the vet services, too. How about that? So again, let me repeat. I went to a horse farm this weekend. And since I'm way off the gringo tourist trail, I saw virtually no gringos when I was up there. Not at first, anyway. Now, this particular horse farm was on a nature preserve. And along with that, there was a nice little patio outdoor cafe restaurant with fantastic views of volcanoes and lakes and such. Anyway, when I was there on Sunday at around 1 o'clock, there were a grand total of two guys, me and another guy, and 20 women sitting in that little cafe. Yes, of course, all horse lovers, all out for a day's ride. 90% of them there with their female friends and family, with their men nowhere in sight. Surely off with their own buddies watching a soccer game somewhere. So call me narrow-minded, call me a sexist, but the numbers say it all. Two guys, 20 women, 30 horses. On a Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, what's that tell you? Now, like I said, at first, there were no gringos. I was sitting in that little cafe, sucking down some of the best coffee in the world at a buck and a half a cup. What's not to like about Latin America, huh? All the while, trying to think of a good excuse why I wouldn't have to go on a horse that day. That's when a nice new double cab Toyota pickup pulled in with a do-gooder NGO First World logo on the side. Funny, they always seem to have the nicest, newest vehicles, you know? It pulled up, and that's when the driver got out. Obviously a bodyguard, he had one of those khaki vests on with a little stitched row of places where you put your shotgun shells. And he went around opening up the doors, and a bunch of gringas got out. All of them wearing matching blue t-shirts with the logo of the do-gooder mission they belong to. In this case, some kind of Lutheran charity group. So as the ladies walked into the place, the bodyguard stood back in the parking lot, smoking a cigarette. By the way, he was the most casual of all the bodyguards in the parking lot. Oh, I forgot to tell you, the parking lot was filled with high-end cars, as well as all the different classes of bodyguards. By the way, the bodyguards were completely unnecessary. No danger here. In fact, it was actually kind of ridiculous. But hey, a job's a job, right? You know, it's actually nice work if you can get it. You sit around all day on your dead ass in the parking lot schmoozing and telling dirty jokes with the other bodyguards while your pompous-ass employer rides horses all day. Now, one word of explanation about the classes of bodyguards. So we had the casual bodyguard with the vest and the shotgun shells, which is kind of the low-end bodyguard down here in Latin America, because as you go through the ranks of bodyguards and prestige, turns out bodyguard status is all about the clothes and the height and the look of the bodyguard and, believe it or not, the color of his skin. The higher-end, more desirable, more expensive bodyguards being thinner, taller, lighter, and in better clothes, normally nice matching dark suits and sunglasses, as opposed to the lower class, kind of sloppy, short, squat, dark-skinned bodyguards with pot bellies and street clothes that don't particularly match. And of course, the difference is all in what you pay the bodyguard. For $300 a month, you get the low end, the guy with the shotgun shell vest. Medium end bodyguards earn around $400 a month. Those would be the bodyguards in the ill-fitting monkey wards or cheap off-the-rack suits. But at least they have suits. Types 1 and 2, often well over 5 feet tall and sometimes even pushing 140 pounds. And the high-end bodyguards? The tall, light-skinned suit and tie guys with the Glocks, they can make even $600 a month. Who, by the way, usually have a diploma that says they're trained by some kind of Israeli security force outfit. They're all over down here, by the way. They practically own that niche. And you'll see that they run all the high-end bodyguard training facilities. They advertise in newspaper yellow pages all the time. I'm not talking about open enrollment bodyguard academies down here. They don't exist. Instead, security companies with Israeli names like Golan recruit candidates who they train and farm out to wealthy individuals who think they need bodyguards and to scumbag, pustulent governments. So you could have your plain Jane, minimally trained bodyguard for $300 a month, or you could pay $500 or more and get one that's been farmed out from a security company that claims to have Israeli trainers. However, the similarity ends there. If you want a real Israeli-trained Mossad-type guy as your bodyguard, that's going to cost you probably $60,000 a year or more. After all, Israel's a first-world country with first-world salaries. However, a tall, thin, light-skinned local Latin, trained by a local outfit that supposedly Israeli-owned and operated, will run you only a tenth of that. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh yeah, back at the Dude Ranch. That horse farm parking lot had all kinds. Now, normally, when I can get away with it, I like to screw with bodyguards when I can. And even though I really like, even love, 95% of Latin America, the culture, everything. However, nothing's perfect. There are a few things I absolutely can't stand about Latin America, like, for example, the way they drive, the way Latins have no concept of time, as well as chicken buses, motorcycles, tuk-tuks, the Latin male's neurotic, almost psychotic obsession with soccer, their football, and those bodyguards. I just can't stomach them. Someday, maybe next show, I'll give you a whole list of all the things I can't stand about Latin America. That should be interesting. So anyway, I can't stomach bodyguards. Though I understand it is a job, and I really should be getting pissed off at their bosses, who are the real pretentious jerks. That said, I love to give bodyguards a hard time when I can get away with it, without risking getting punched in the face or shot. For example, in this particular case, I started taking pictures of the bodyguards, and they hate that. In fact, many times, they'll give me a dirty look and try to take my picture, and I'll put my hand up to my face, and that really pisses them off. Which, by the way, if you live down here long enough, you'll know that having bodyguards is completely for show. It's really all about showing your neighbors and friends that you have enough dough to afford a bodyguard or two or three or five. And, of course, the double-edged sword of that whole thing is if you have bodyguards, the bad guys of the world obviously know you're the one they want to extort from or you're the one with the kid they want to kidnap, since you're pretty much displaying your affluence and the amount of dough you have by having bodyguards. Worse yet, if there's some kind of theft or a kidnapping or kidnapping attempt, it's been shown time and time again that up to 90% of the time it's a bodyguard or a former bodyguard that was involved. After all, they know everything you've got and all the moves you make. And the fact is, bodyguards wouldn't steal from their own bosses or wouldn't attempt to do anything crazy like kidnapping if they were treated kindly, fairly, and like real human beings. So it's fair to say nearly every bodyguard resents his boss in some way or another. But they all pretty much absolutely love their jobs because they're just sitting on their dead asses all day or just standing around doing absolutely nothing but trying to look the part. So if you're in a big Latin American city, you'll run into them all the time. At the barbershop, Sears, Starbucks, the IHOP, shopping malls, the Costco checkout line. but most especially parking lots, because there are some establishments that won't allow bodyguards inside, like, for example, health clubs, high-end restaurants, and some private schools. So one day I'm in the checkout line at Costco, standing right next to an absolutely bored bodyguard, whose job was to look tough and also push the cart. Meanwhile, his boss, a recognizable government suck-ass, was on the phone maybe 100 feet away. And I said to the guy, I was standing right next to him, "Say, that's your boss over there, right? No one likes that guy. He's an absolute jerk. What's he like to work for? Is he a dick in that respect, too?" And you know what? I must have hit a nerve. He took his sunglasses off, he rolled his eyes, and he said, "Yeah, someday I'm going to get a decent job." So that was a guy, obviously, with the right idea. But again, a job is a job, and I guess he felt trapped. And down here in Latin America, with that big lag time effect we talk about, it's almost like the 1960s and 70s in the States. Back then, when my parents and probably your parents were in the workforce, they held on to their jobs even if they didn't like them because it was a steady paycheck. And their parents didn't experience that because, well, that was the Depression era and all that. Well, that's what it's like for the lower middle and middle classes here in Latin America. They hold on to their jobs. They just don't quit. They feel fortunate just to have a steady paycheck. The family's got to eat, right? And I find it amazing as to what Latins will put up with in regards to a job. You wouldn't believe how many very low-paying jobs down here really suck. Now, as far as bodyguards, it's the low-end guys that'll shoot the breeze with you and have fun and laugh. And the more serious ones with the three-piece suits, well, they try to act cool and tough and don't give you the time of day. Figures, huh? You work for a jerk and it can't help but rub off on you. But then again, they sort of have to put on a preposterous front like they're actually guarding someone that's worthwhile or important. It's all part of that stupid, classist, pretentious game. When I run into those guys, especially in traffic where they're always weaving because they think they've got more of a right to be there than you do, that includes being in line where they think they can take cuts, I will on occasion, when I know I can get away with it, flip them the bird or worse. Though never for no reason. They have to provoke by taking cuts or trying to pull their imaginary macho rank, of which they ain't got any. For example, one day I was at a stoplight and a brand new silver Toyota Hilux pulled up right next to me, 5 identically uniformed bodyguards in the car, and right behind them, a giant bulletproof SUV with the big boss trailing behind. Well, as luck would have it, the driver of that car was looking down at me in my little car. By the way, they all had their windows down, so you could see how cool and proper they looked in their three-piece suits, sunglasses, and earbuds. Anyway, the driver looked at me coldly and gave me that get-out-of-the-way-spud. "Can't you see I'm escorting a VIP?" kind of look. That's when I rolled my passenger side window down. Remember now, these guys are the high-end bodyguards in designer three-piece suits. And I said to this guy in Spanish, I said, "Señor, discúlpame, pero tú tienes un gran moco en el punto de su nariz." Then the other bodyguards in the car broke out laughing and the guy just freaked out. He had this priceless look of anguish on his face. I wish I could have got a photo. Anyway, the light turned green and I was off. So then what did I say to provoke all that? Well, I just said, "Excuse me, mister, did you know you have a huge booger hanging from your nose?" And believe me, having a gringo saying that to a person in a three-piece suit is all the worst. But I digress as usual. Where was I? Oh yeah, back at the horse stables. Well, the group of do-gooder gringas with the matching t-shirts walked up to the information desk and said, "Do you speak English?" And the young lady behind the counter said in very broken English, "I speak some English." Oh, and by the way, as to rules and regulations at the riding stables, well, there really weren't any. Not only that, surprise, surprise, no one had to sign any kind of legal liability release document. You know, in case you fell off the horse and got trampled or broke your neck or something. And the price to ride a horse? A whole $4 for a half an hour and $7 for an hour. Now, I understand the going rate up in the States for riding a horse at a stable is $25 to $50 an hour. Again, bearing out what I've said so many times on the show, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, you'll pay a fraction of what you'd pay for the same service or product up in the States. So the ladies signed up for a half hour of horseback riding, only $4. Oh, one more thing. They did have a chalkboard in the information office, and it said, minimum age to ride a horse alone, 10 years. And the maximum weight for a person, 240 pounds. Which makes you think some gringos have been there and have been rejected. Oh, and this will make you laugh. When that lady who spoke a little bit of English was explaining about the setup, she said, We have 40 apples at our riding stable and around 20 different trails. To which one of the gringa ladies raised her hand like she was in school or something. We gringos are noted for that, especially when we're in groups. Yeah, I've seen it 1,000 times. People will want to ask a question or go to the bathroom and they'll raise their hand, even though they're 45 years old. Some of us will anyway, especially those of us who went to Catholic school. Anyway, the gringa lady raised her hand and said, "Did you say 40 apple trees? What kind of apples? I didn't know they grew apples here." And the Latin girl with the bad English said, "Yes, 40 apples." So now you're thinking there's something lost in translation here. What's that 40 apple thing all about? Well, let me tell you, if you've been down here long enough, and if you listened to my show last week, I was talking about measurements. You know, the metric in the English system? Well, just so happens, the Spanish word for apple is manzana. M-A-N-Z-A-N-A, manzana. And each manzana, according to Spanish measurements, is 1.72 acres. So when the lady said they have 40 manzanas, they don't have 40 apples, although that's the same direct translation. In English, that's about 70 acres. So keep that in mind if someone's talking about a particular piece of land. One manzana or one apple would be a very nice piece of land for a single family home. About 1.73 acres. So anyway, those gringa do-gooder ladies rented some horses, the last of the horses, by the way, and as soon as they took off, it started raining, which couldn't have pleased me more because I didn't want to ride one of those beasts anyway. And the gringas in the matching t-shirts, well, they got drenched, and there's nothing worse than being drenched in the forest on a muddy path, sitting on a wet horse that doesn't much like the situation either. Better them than me. So was it karma or my dumb luck? Who knows? And get this, as soon as it started raining, all of a sudden, the bodyguards sprinted out of the parking lot with open umbrellas. Yes, I guess that's another demeaning part of a bodyguard's job. Diverting rainwater from their lady boss's designer jodhpurs. No, not diapers, jodhpurs. What a life, huh? Okay, now for something completely different. Onward and upward. Now, I'd be lying to you if I didn't tell you that at least about 1 out of 5 emails is regarding sex, love, romance, mating, dating, and jodhpurs. No, not jodhpurs, just kidding. So, there's a lot of interest in gringo guys coming down here and hooking up with Latinas, and gringa ladies from up in the States coming down and hooking up with Latin guys. Now, I don't ever want to make this show a kind of a Lonely Hearts Club thing. However, today we've got a few things to sort out in that department. All right. Since going down to Colombia is very big on the minds of so many gringos and expats, a lot of it motivated by the way girls like Sofia Vergara and Shakira have kind of taken the U.S. first world media by storm. Not to mention, Colombia gets an excessive amount of media coverage for their beauty pageants. And of course, the latest rage, those Colombian clothing outlets featuring what they call Colombian jean stores, which offer the rear view illusion of, well, you know the illusion. I'm going to read a couple emails here that are certainly on PC, so get used to it. The first one from a single lonely heart gringo that went down to Colombia and has been there for a while. He says, "You know, Medellin, Colombia is all the rage now, especially with international living and all those retirement magazines talking about what a great deal it is and how the weather's so nice and, well, how it's just so damn beautiful and cheap. And that, by the way, is why I came down to Colombia. I've been down for over a decade. However, these days, the type of gringo tourists and expats is changing quite a bit. Many more guys are coming down looking for a companion or a woman or just a lot of women and a lot of companions. Anyway, like I said, I've been down here for over a decade, retired at 45, and just looking myself for a good woman and permanent companion. Now, I know very few local Colombian women that have money to go out and pay for a cab or buy any food at a restaurant better than McDonald's or much less have a car. Now, unless they were university-educated professionals, then, of course, they may have a car and a nice house, but they always, most always, have a good-looking boyfriend or husband somewhere in the wings. But when you meet them as a gringo, they are so very nice, and they will tell you yes at first that they do have a boyfriend or a husband, but after they get to know you, perhaps after one cup of coffee and a little flirting, Colombian girls love to flirt, you better watch out because their boyfriends and husbands are really jealous. Now, generally, the typical Colombian girl from a big city, when you have a date, she'll ask for cab fare because, well, she doesn't have a car. And you'll give it to her, of course. and she'll wait till you get into your cab, and she'll run off to a bus or the metro and pocket the difference. That's so common here. I've seen it a million times. Also, clueless gringos out there, you must realize if you're 45 plus and going out with a 25-year-old, or let's say 60 and going out with a 30-year-old, stop thinking it's because she likes you for what you are or who you are. It's simply because you are a good meal ticket. You must man up and deal with it. Because you see, Johnny, even though almost all Colombian ladies and men have jobs, they only make, on the average, $300 to maybe $500 a month. Meaning for the average Latin girl, taxi cabs are completely out of the question, unless they're out with their lady friends on a Friday or Saturday night, then they'll all pile into the same taxi. Now, you see, Johnny, big city Colombian ladies know that your average gringo loser, like I considered myself up in the States so long ago, even so, a loser like me making $30,000 a year makes 5 to 10 times what the average Colombian person makes. Anyway, like I mentioned, the place is now being flooded with gringos. I like to stay away from Lieras, Barrio Colombia, Las Palmas, Las 33, Mangos, Sabanita, etc., because there are just way too many gringos. I could have stayed back in the States and seen fewer gringos. Yep, they're streaming into the big cities, and guess what? In almost all cases, when it's single guys, it's for sex tourism. You know, before Sofia Vergara and her hit TV show made the scene up in the States, Costa Rica, Panama, and Brazil were the main sex tourism sites. Now, it's the big cities in Colombia, Cartagena and Medellin. Man, again, I can't overemphasize what Sofia Vergara has done to tourism down here. I keep away from all those crazy and clueless gringos myself, though I was one when I first came down. I always prefer to hang out in places farther out where the gringos are sparse. Anyway, Johnny, I don't consider myself much of a swinger. I'm a pretty conservative guy, really. But let me tell you, if you choose to come to one of the big Colombian cities, Cali, Medellin, Cartagena, Bogota, you just have to make a decision to simply choose how much you want to let the women take advantage of you, the so-called rich gringo. And why not let them get away with a little bit? Taxi fare, of course. Dinner. Maybe a little clothes shopping. I don't care. But many guys come down and blow thousands of bucks because so many Colombian ladies use the line, "Mi mami is enferma," meaning, "I need a little money because my mother is sick." Of course, it could be the grandmother, the uncle, the aunt. Doesn't matter. Just note when you hear that story, the lady has her angles and is not as pure as the driven snow. Certainly not long-term stable relationship material. Then he says, "Johnny, you know, I found out if you're really interested in a girl, but you're not sure if she's into you or just your wallet, I've developed a kind of a test. You plan a big night out and you tell her all about it. Then when she arrives, or maybe a half hour earlier, you call her. Tell her you had a big lunch and say you just want a hamburger or a hot dog or a chuco off the street. If she says sure thing and doesn't put up a fuss, she's probably a keeper. Now, if she's a middle-class working girl, she might really need some clothes. You can tell by the wear on their shoes. When you're down here long enough, you can spot things like that. You know, they try the best they can and they don't make much, and they might really be helping out a sick grandmother or a mother, because a lot of times dad has left the family, is nowhere to be seen. Or he's a drunk, and she might be bringing in quite a bit of the salary to support the whole family. So, by all means, if she is supporting the family, you can help her out. Do take her shopping. If she's the right kind of girl, it will seem just like Christmas to her. And if not, well, that's a warning sign too, isn't it? Though another test is to ask her where she'd like to buy those jeans and the blouse. If she picks a high-end, upscale mall, well, say you've got another engagement, you're leaving town and run in the opposite direction. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some really, really nice, calm, non-partying average girls in Medellin, though they all love to dance. Which to us men is not really partying, is it? And you'll find them working as secretaries and bank tellers and office workers, etc. My favorites are from Robledo or above Boston or Manrique or Buenos Aires, Colombia. There you'll find just a lot of nice laid-back girls with very good families. Also, remember, I'm a normal-looking guy, a solid 5 out of 10 up in the States. No hottie. I'm 5'10", in my mid-50s, with a few extra pounds, thin hair, and yet, because I speak a bit of Spanish and have a nice personality, and of course because I'm a gringo, I can strike up a conversation with almost any Latin girl and she'll never give me the brush off or treat me like I'm intruding. They're always kind, courteous, and eager to help you out if, for example, you're looking for an ATM or a bank. Unlike where I come from up in the States, they never look at you like you're ruining their day or bothering them. They're always glad to help. I know, Johnny, that's your famous gringo advantage, right? And yes, I know, it really exists. In fact, Johnny, I'd say you're downplaying it, if anything. Now, Johnny, the thing about gringos going to the big cities, especially in Colombia, if they're single and there's a few of them together, they're always on the prowl and looking for edgier things in parts of the city that aren't recommended. I tried that scene when I first got down here, too. In fact, I've seen people shot, robbed, and drugged in places gringos should not be hanging, especially at night. Like you say, Johnny, there are districts to hang, there are districts to avoid. Then he says, my final advice, nice girls here in Colombia really appreciate the truth. If, for example, you tell them that you prefer going out with many people, you would normally have to dance around that if you were dealing with a lady from up in the States, for example. At least that's what I had to deal with when I lived back there. However, here in Colombia, they seem to accept that and will probably trust you even more. And of course, if you're looking for a long-term, meaningful relationship, be honest and tell them that too. And they'll be perfectly honest with you also. Of course, there are lots and lots of beautiful Colombian girls that are not nice girls. And they'll lie to you. Man, will they lie to you. Now, you may have heard that Colombian women only like blue-eyed gringos, and that's far from the truth. In fact, they like any gringo, white, brown, or black. Sure, Colombia, like the rest of Latin America, like the rest of the world, is a racist place. Everyone down here, in fact, want their children to be lighter, taller, and have clear or blue eyes. But that's just not possible for 99.9% of the population. Again, that's where that gringo advantage comes in. By the way, Johnny, I also lived in Brazil for 3 years and had the time of my life, but that was a while ago. Now it's a real hellhole, and you have to practically put a padlock on your wallet. Everyone has become a thief or a scavenger. In fact, the cops are pretty much all on the take, and you can't even see a doctor in a hospital unless you pull out your cash first. Then you go to the front of the line, and it's a long, long line. Oops, we're near the end of the show now, and I can't finish this email. We'll get to it next time, so stay tuned. Meanwhile, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. And do go to www.thenewexpat.com because you can still sign up for my July 2016 Expat Insider Seminar. And of course, while you're there, check out John Galt's famous pre- and post-seminar trips too. Remember, it's all about getting your plan B in motion. There's really no better way than to come down and get boots on the ground.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.